little audio there from Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system in action against rockets fired by Hamas jihadist terrorists in the Gaza Strip against Israel over Tel Aviv. Introducing us here to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Herod, a weekly blog talk radio show where we like to examine important current events for conservatives and others of the day. And today we're joined by Samir A. Zidan, a veteran reporter on the Middle East and former State Department counterterrorism analyst, extremism analyst, who is a native Arab Christian, a Rumi Levant Christian from the Bethlehem region in the Holy Land, the Palestinian territories, the town of Beit Jalal, whom I've had on the program before. And we want to discuss the recent crises and violence afflicting Israel that has broken out in this past week with Hamas and rioting on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem around the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock Shrine and the property disputes over Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood in Jerusalem and also outbreaks of Arab violence against Jews in Israel. Well, welcome to the show, Samir.
Thank you, Andrew. How are you today?
Well, first of all, starting off, we've had this outbreak of violence on the Temple Mount around the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock Shrine. This, according to Islamic theology, marks the site of the third holiest site in Islam and the site of Muhammad's miraculous night journey in the 7th century from the Arabian Peninsula to Jerusalem on a winged Pegasus and then into heaven to meet with various prophets. Discuss the importance of this Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock Shrine in what Muslims call the Haram al-Sharif on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem for a Palestinian society, Palestinian Muslim society, and the wider Muslim world.
Well, of course, it is considered, as you just mentioned, that this is the third holy site for them. And it has been there since like 8th century when it was built by the caliph who was in Damascus. Now, of course, since then, it's been kept with some kind of special sanctuary for Muslims. When the Crusaders took Jerusalem at the beginning of the 11th century, they turned it into a kind of stables. Now, let me recall something. Some indications showed, as a matter of fact, that prior to the Arabs' conquest of Jerusalem, there was a church in that place to commemorate Jesus Christ taken to the temple on the 40 days, according to the Jewish tradition. So there has been a lot of confirmation that there was a church actually built in that site, but not a temple. Let me make it clear. What was there was just a church to commemorate that day that Christians celebrate. Now, now of course, it is considered as one of the holiest sites for Muslims. Now, for Palestinian Muslims, definitely it is deep-rooted in their culture, that this is part of their culture besides, of course, their religion. Now, I have to say that it is a very controversial and a very sensitive issue because that's where you find everybody united behind this rhetoric. Jordan claims to be the sovereign on this site, and Muslims worldwide cannot dispute that fact. So definitely, it is a very sensitive topic.
Well, yes, currently under an arrangement that Israel agreed to after Israel evicted the Jordanian forces from Jerusalem in the 1967 Six-Day War, the Israel maintained the rule of the Jordanian religious authorities, the Waqf trusteeship, over the Temple Mount and to administer the Dome of the Rock Shrine and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's interesting you talk about reports that there was a Christian church on the Temple Mount after the Crusaders took over Jerusalem in 1096 during the Crusades, the First Crusade. There was also, for example, the Romans during their occupation of the territory after they destroyed the Jewish Second Temple here on the Temple Mount, the holiest site of Judaism. They also built a pagan temple there. So many different occupiers of this land have built their houses of worship, their holy sites on this Temple Mount, and now this claim of Muslims for this Al-Aqsa Mosque is only the latest example. Israelis have told me that this Al-Aqsa Mosque is really the leading issue that Palestinian authorities, like the Palestinian leaders, like the Palestinian Authority, can use to mobilize people. You can think of, for example, the largest party in the Palestine Liberation Organization, Fatah's Brigade, named after the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Or here in America, we have this American Muslims for Palestine organization that's kind of an offshoot of Hamas supporters that has a Dome of the Rock on their insignia. How do Palestinians feel about the Al-Aqsa Mosque and any claims that Jews are threatening this mosque?
Well, the issue here is that right like last month, there have been a lot of rumors and some information about that some Israeli settlers were about to storm Al-Aqsa Mosque to celebrate the reunification of Jerusalem. Now, this has been taken out of proportion by Hamas. I believe that Hamas was the main promoter behind the current incidents that have been taking place inside Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hamas wanted to embarrass the Palestinian Authority, because we have to remember that recently the Palestinian Authority canceled a slated election for sometimes on the 22nd of May. So because of fear that Hamas was going to win the majority of votes. So Hamas wanted to embarrass the Palestinian Authority by escalating the situation in Jerusalem. And of course, we have to take into consideration also the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, which was also another stormy issue that escalated the situation.
Yeah, but isn't this really a common thing that the Palestinian Authority, or Hamas for that matter, they always want to, you know, a good way to really whip up anger against Israel to get popular support is always to say, as you indicated here, to claim that the Israelis, the Jews, are going to do something to threaten this mosque. Was that really going to happen this time? Don't the Israeli authorities take a lot of care and concern to make sure that nothing happens to these Muslim holy sites? Isn't that just really what's called a sort of this Al-Aqsa blood libel, you can call it, that they always want to, you know, you had, for example, the knife intifada a couple of years ago where it was claimed that Jews were threatening the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the Palestinian Authority sort of unleashed this wave of knife attacks across Israel and the Palestinian territories.
Well, I have to be very careful here, because the Palestinian Authority is not in any condition to stir up any disputes right now. I think the Palestinian Authority was hoping for lull that would serve its continuity, because in my opinion, it's in a very precarious situation right now. So again, I still believe that it was Hamas that really, I don't want to say instigated, but really was behind these events in Al-Aqsa Mosque. Also, we have also to be objective and say that during the month of Ramadan, the Israeli security, because of fear of COVID and stampede and what have you, they were trying to regulate the amount of Muslims coming to the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And this put like really obstacles at the Damascus Gate and created some tension. Now, Hamas knew how to take advantage of that. Now, let me reiterate something, Andrew, that not many people are aware of, that on the 1st of May, which was Saturday, the day before the Greek Orthodox Easter, or the Eastern Orthodox Easter, which was celebrated this year, 2nd of May, Israel also tried to prevent Christians from reaching the Holy Sepulchre in the whole city, which was like, you know, I watched some the news over there carefully, which also did not fit with what Israel has always said about protecting minorities, religious minorities' rights to perform their rituals freely. So something that didn't come clear to me in what was happening in Jerusalem. And this might lead us to think of internal political issues within Israel itself. I am not 100% sure that Prime Minister Netanyahu wants to keep it easy for his opponent to form a government. I think I have to say that internally there is something here that could have prompted the situation to escalate, and at the same time, as Hamas tried to hit Israel with their missiles, Israel needed to send an unequivocal message to Iran as well through Hamas that we will have zero tolerance to what is happening. At the same time, this should work as a message to the U.S. administration, which comes across to be a little bit more lenient with Iran than the previous administration, which is a legitimate concern for Israel, as a matter of fact. So, well, yes, the situation is... Just go ahead.
Oh, I was just curious. Why did Israel restrict on... you talk about the Eastern Orthodox Easter right after May 1st. Was Israel then again concerned about COVID issues of allowing masses of people to come into Jerusalem at that time?
I don't think so, because this I became aware through contact with the Christian clergymen that this has been happening for the last few years, that they try to prevent Christians from reaching the Holy Sepulchre, and they were just kind of like, you know, the behavior wasn't like in line with what Israel always claimed to be tolerant and supporting the religious minorities to perform their rituals in Jerusalem. I have to be very careful here before indicating Israel of any wrongdoing. As a matter of fact, you know, being myself a Greek Orthodox, I contacted several authorities, and they confirmed that it wasn't related to COVID, and it wasn't related to fear of stampede, as a matter of fact.
Okay, so it was more of a crowd control issue. They were worried about some sort of, I mean, we saw, for example, just recently, there was that collapse of a bridge at the Jewish festival in Israel, the Lag Omar, I think it's called, where, you know, you had several deaths, or you've had stampedes in the past with the Muslim pilgrimage, the Hajj to Mecca. Every couple of years, there it's sort of a traffic control nightmare there. There are various stampedes where people get killed. So was it then a crowd control issue that led Israel to restrict the numbers of people going to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre?
Absolutely not. Again, I reiterate one more time that they were prevented from even getting into the old city. So they were at the new gate, and I saw videos where some Christians got beaten up by Israeli police who were trying to get to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. So let us make it clear here that when I started investigating this incident, I became aware that this was not the first year, that this has been happening for a while, that they were trying to prevent some Christians from reaching the Holy Sepulchre. They would allow only a certain amount of people to be there. Again, the issue here is kind of like a little bit controversial, but the church has confirmed that there has been several attempts by the Israeli authority to prevent Christians from reaching the Holy Sepulchre.
Well, that's often a common criticism that is made, well, certainly in pro-Palestinian circles. I've heard often here in the United States that Christians in the Palestinian territories suffer from religious repression from Israel precisely because of all these sort of like security controls and so forth. Has that? What has been your impression of Christians living under Israeli rule, both, I guess you could say, under security controls within the Palestinian territories, or for that matter, within Israel itself, among the Christians of Israel? How have Christians fared under vis-a-vis Israel?
Hello, Andrew.
Hi, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I didn't catch the last phrase you said. If you don't mind, if you could use
the
phrase again.
Oh yeah, I was just wondering. I'd ask you in the past. Often, many I've heard this argument before that many have said Christians suffer from Israeli repression due to, for example, security controls of going from, say, the Palestinian territories to Jerusalem. Has that been the case? Have Christians like in Beit Jalal or Bethlehem had problems exercising their faith by going to Jerusalem or elsewhere because of Israeli security controls?
No. These are two different topics completely. The Christians who are living under the thumb of the Palestinian Authority in the Bethlehem area are exhausted of the kind of persecution they're going through because of the inept Palestinian Authority and because of the growing Islamic zealotry among Palestinians. This is a fact. Nobody can deny that. Whom you want to consider Christian Palestinians or Palestinian Christians are in very bad shape for being under the Palestinian Authority. And we've seen that Israel has been trying to ease the restrictions on them by facilitating their incoming into Israel and getting them work permits and making their life more tolerable. However, when the issue was raised about the Palestinian Christians are being living harsh time under the corrupt and inept Palestinian Authority, the Israelis' reply was that they couldn't help them anymore because by helping them, they could risk bringing down the Palestinian Authority. There is a strong sense among Israeli officials that the Christians in Bethlehem area form a very important component for the Palestinian Authority. So if Israel comes and says, we want to extend some kind of a special arrangement for these Christians, this would really hit the legitimacy of the Palestinian Authority and which could cause its collapse. So for Israel, they're making it crystal clear that Israel's priority is to keep the Palestinian Authority running because of security cooperation and coordination and what have you, and they're willing to help the Christians as long as it does not hurt the Palestinian Authority.
I see. So you're saying that the Palestinian Authority would collapse if Christians were to say in Bethlehem and elsewhere in the Palestinian territories were to take away any support for the Palestinian Authority, because then the Palestinian Authority would have no legitimacy left.
No, because of Bethlehem, the importance of Bethlehem, it is a very important topic here. The presence of these few Christians has enabled the Palestinian Authority to camouflage its Islamic zealotry. So they say, oh, this is a national cause. This is not an Islamic cause. We have Christians. So they bring every now and then some Christian puppets and put them here and there to speak. And even they enlist some clergymen who are Zimmis to speak on favor of the Palestinian Authority. But the truth is completely different on the ground. If you come, let's say, just for the sake of argument, and say Israel comes and says to the Christian Palestinians living in Bethlehem, hey, you are to become Israeli citizens. Are you willing to take the Israeli citizenship? They will, 99% will say, thank you, yes, please. So imagine a scenario where Christian Palestinians are given Israeli citizenship. With what legitimacy you can keep Bethlehem, the Church of Nativity, under the rule of the Palestinian Authority? Because you have to bear into consideration that Bethlehem is the birthplace of Jesus Christ. So you're not going to tell the Christians of Bethlehem, you know what, move to Israel. you will have a stronger claim here to say, you know what, this area belongs to Israel, as a matter of fact, and that Bethlehem is a twin city of Jerusalem that cannot be taken out of the state of Israel. So this is really very dangerous situation. Imagine what could happen if Israel decides to grant the Palestinian Christian citizenship or make them, you know, part of a different legal criteria living in that area.
Well, that's a very interesting idea. That would certainly mean that various parts of these territories in the disputed West Bank, Judea and Samaria could then be annexed and become part of Israel, just as has been proposed under, say, the Trump plan for various other territories like the Jordan River Valley. And that would really also internationally, I mean, that would really weaken the Palestinian Authority, its claims to be some sort of new Palestinian state. So that's an interesting idea. Has anyone ever really proposed that before in Israel, for example, that they should offer ultimately citizenship to such Arab Christians?
I don't know whether I mentioned that in your program one time. In 1994, before Israel pulled out from Bethlehem area, they held a meeting with the three mayors of Bethlehem area, the three Christian mayors. One mayor was in favor of keeping the area under Israeli control. Two mayors did not vote in favor, but they did not vote against because of fear. Because, you know, it is well known that PLO was able to intimidate and threaten any voice, any Palestinian voice that would contradict their agenda, including Muslims. So those people feared for their life, simply for their own personal life, and they decided not to support that gesture. But right now, there is a growing, I don't want to say growing, there is almost unanimous support for such a notion where Christian Palestinians become Israeli citizens. This is among them. I receive tons of messages supporting this notion. They are sick and tired of living under the corrupt and inept Palestinian Authority. There have been incidents where Christian properties have been hurt in one way or another by the Palestinian Authority or by pro-Palestinian Authority Muslims. There have been a lot of cases where Christian grudges have been growing. Now, this brings us to the issue here of the Jewish state. I mean, you're talking about a Jewish state reflecting self-definition, but at the same time seeking to remain democratic. And in order to remain democratic, it will have to respect all citizens' rights and uphold the free society, which means it will have to incorporate the Christian minority, fully incorporated within the state of Israel. And this brings us to talk about the, yes, but just let me finish this point. The Christians who live inside Israel as Israeli citizens, they, right now, the number of them serving in the Israeli army is increasing. But I think Israel should make it clear to them that they will have to serve in the Israeli army as the Jews and Druze do. That's how you incorporate the people within the country. And this also could be the case with the Christian Palestinians. And on the long run, I do not think that there will be, I can't imagine a Palestinian state created in the West Bank. I can't think of a Palestinian state in the West Bank.
I see. So you're saying that the Christians both within Israel and also any such Christians in the Palestinian territories now who would also become Israeli citizens, that they should then become like the Druze or the Circassians, another non-Jewish community in Israel that also has a mandatory national service. They also serve in the military. So the Christians should be the next
Indeed.
Community to do that.
Indeed. And that goes...
Wait, you talk about the
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, you talk about the Palestinian society and the Christians suffering from the Islamic discrimination there. How popular is Hamas within the Palestinian society? We just recently noted, you know, these elections were called off on May 22nd. Most people think that was done because precisely because the Palestinian Authority, led by Mahmoud Abbas and this Fatah faction, really feared that they would lose these elections to Hamas for this Palestinian national Palestinian Legislative Council. How popular is Hamas within Palestinian society?
Very. I mean, I don't know in Gaza how popular it is, but I just saw a poster right now in Facebook that if elections were to be held today, I think Hamas would overwhelmingly clean the house. Hamas is very popular right now because, again, the Palestinian Authority has been swamped with corruption, tainted with corruption, and unable to reflect a clear passage for the people. Now, you also have to understand that the Palestinian people, who are in vast majority Muslims, they're just part of this growing Islamic zealotry that we have been witnessing for the last two decades or so.
And well, I've heard that before, that the Palestinian society is very devout. Why is that? Is it just simply because of the indoctrination, say, in the school system and the mosque that keeps this going?
Well, this is really a very good question. I mean, the Palestinians have always been very religious people, despite the fact they always tried to portray a secular image, but that I doubted it always. I always believed that even within the so-called secular Palestinian movements, you could still feel that there is an Islamic influence there, that it could grow or shrink based on the situation. So right now, in the West Bank, because Hamas is not so popular, there is another group that is called the Islamic Liberation Movement, or the party. And it's been growing alarmingly. And some of the imams, actually, in Al-Aqsa Mosque, remember the incident that took place in France against Macron? You could see, if you closed your eyes and listened to the rhetoric that was coming out of Al-Aqsa Mosque, you could think that you were listening to some kind of imam who was just delivering a speech in Kandahar. The rhetoric was so overwhelmingly Islamic. Every now and then, you hear some imams within Al-Aqsa Mosque who talk about the restoration of the Islamic Caliphate, the conquer of Rome, the restoration of Andalusia. And let me remind you of an incident that took place 10 months ago when Erdogan decided to convert the Hagia Sophia Cathedral into a mosque. The overwhelming support the Palestinians showed was impressive. Among the flags, the Turkish flags, you could see the Palestinian flag in the vicinity of the Hagia Sophia Cathedral. And this is to show how supportive they were of the Ottoman Empire. The same thing, the main imam of Al-Aqsa Mosque, in fact, went to Istanbul and led the prayer, and Erdogan was behind him, and he talked about, you know, this Islamic unity and so on and so forth. So this brings us to the idea, if the Palestinian Muslims are always complaining about their rights in Al-Aqsa Mosque, I wonder why would they support the Turks to take over a well-known cathedral and turn it into a mosque. So would that allow us to say, at least let's split Al-Aqsa Mosque area? Because here there is also a Jewish presence that was there almost 2,000 years ago. So are you willing to share it? They will say no. See what I mean?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. People have often talked about the supremacist nature of Islamic doctrine, and that, among other things, Muslims throughout the past have conquered the holy sites of other faiths. I mean, you talked about the Hagia Sophia Cathedral in what was then Constantinople, and then conquered and became Istanbul. Later, in the Turkish Republic, became Istanbul. And then here at the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the holiest site of Judaism, this was then conquered in the 7th century by Arab Muslim armies, and you had then later this Al-Aqsa Mosque built upon it. As you're indicating, could it ever be possible for Palestinians and Muslims in the broader Islamic community worldwide to accept such a Jewish presence on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem? There are increasing calls in Israel, for example, that Jews be able to pray on the Temple Mount, at least that this status quo that Israel agreed to in 1967, where, for example, Jews are prohibited from praying on the Temple Mount, that Israelis are increasingly saying, why do we have to respect this and abide by this and respect this Islamic power, this Islamic supremacy here? Could Palestinian Muslims or Muslims in the world at large accept such a coexistence, a Jewish presence on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem?
Well, the recent events answer your question. It is inconceivable to think for one second that Muslims would be willing to share Al-Aqsa Mosque. And let me tell you something. There were attempts by some Jordanians today, as we speak, to cross the border. Thousands of people gathered at the border to so-called defend Al-Aqsa. Now, the current situation right now, as I was about to start the show with you, Saudi Arabia issued a statement in regard to what is happening in Gaza. So, honestly, what we see right now is a complete deterioration to the situation that could really escalate to something much more serious. Because the Arab states which have normalized with Israel find themselves more embarrassed than ever. Because yesterday, I mean, they were in favor of normalization, they were talking about that, but now it's becoming a little bit difficult for them to go on with that because, again, of the religious nature of the conflict.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, thinking about this Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock Shrine, you know, others have noted, I mean, there's really no factual basis for this claim that Muhammad has some sort of miraculous night journey from the Arabian Peninsula on this winged Pegasus to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, and then from there up into heaven. I mean, one, there's, you know, it's a purely miraculous claim, so there's no evidence for that. And two, that it's even disputed whether you could even claim that the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which means the farthest mosque in Arabic, that the location of this Al-Aqsa Mosque that's cited in the Quran was in Jerusalem. Well, how do Palestinians react? I mean, could you ever engage in any sort of argument with Palestinians and say, Palestinian Muslims and say Bethlehem or Ramallah and question them? I mean, the basic law of the Palestinian Authority, its preamble, talks about Jerusalem being the site of Muhammad's miraculous journey into heaven. So is this a belief that could ever be challenged in Palestinian society?
There have been some scholars, Muslim scholars, who debated that topic and that, in fact, Al-Aqsa Mosque was somewhere in Saudi Arabia because, as you just mentioned, Al-Aqsa means the father, and that it was not under any circumstances referring to anything that was in Jerusalem. However, right now, I doubt very much indeed that you can find a rhetoric where such notion could be widely accepted by Muslims. So what do I expect that is going to happen? I doubt very much indeed that under the current situation, Muslims would accept the presence of any Jewish status in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Because you have to understand that in Islam itself, they look at Jews and Christians that either when they are either zimmis or infidels. So that's how they look at the Jews, that the Jews can live there as dhimmis. In fact, I want to say something very funny. The former head of police of Dubai, who's quite controversial, yesterday or the day before yesterday, he tweeted that it's better for the Jews to leave Jerusalem. Are you listening to this? And we're talking about the former head of the police in Dubai, who should be very liberal, moderate. He was just talking that it's better for the Jews to leave Jerusalem and they can come and live among Arabs. They would be more living in peaceful conditions than staying in Jerusalem. So what does that tell you? It tells you clearly that there is no full recognition of the coexistence between the two people. And that's a scary thing about it, because I doubt it very much indeed that even pulling the 1967 border would end the conflict. I doubt that very much indeed. I know that's not going to happen, but just for the sake of argument, imagine that some kind of power that obliged Israel to pull out of 1967 border, that will not end the conflict.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people predict it would just be, you know, a replay of Israel's withdrawal from the Gaza Strip in 2005. You would just be handing over yet another terrorist base, this time even closer to vital Israeli areas. I mean, if you gave over parts of, say, Jerusalem or something, or areas near Jerusalem, then, you know, once again, Jerusalem could be under fire as the western part of the city was when the Jordanian military was in the eastern part of Jerusalem. One of the things that's talking about there's also been violence in Israel itself. You've had in Israeli towns like Lod, for example, which is near Tel Aviv. There's been a lot of anti-Jewish rioting. Synagogues have been set on fire. The mayor there of the town of Lod, it's a town of sort of mixed Jewish Arab population. About a third of the population is Arab. Has talked about a Kristallnacht, another pogrom against Jews in the town. What is the relationship between Arabs and Jews inside of Israel? I mean, do the same sort of Islamic fanaticism, this kind of jihad Sharia mentality, does that also dominate the relations of Arabs and Jews in Israel itself?
To a less extent, I can say yes, there has been a growing Islamic movement within the Israeli Arabs. And again, this has been seen in even in elections, that they were able to score a lot of victories. Now, in regard to the Arab-Israeli relationship inside Israel, as I mentioned earlier, you have to remember that Israel, as a Jewish state, it has to also maintain a democratic status. And that means that they should be reaching out to the minorities more aggressively. They cannot allow Christian Arabs to enjoy full Israeli citizenship without complying with some obligations. Again, I can't see how you can oblige all the Arabs in Israel to serve in the army. But in my opinion, once a person serves in the army, your loyalty is 100% focused to that country. And I can give you an example of that. I mean, my daughter is about to join the Navy. And she's an American, but I just asked her why. She said, this is my country. And this is part of the feeling that you are part of the country. Now, this is where Israel has to work on those communities in order to make them feel part of Israel more than ever and to make them see that it is their state as well. In 2000, when the Intifada broke up after the failure of Camp David, there were serious violent attacks inside Israel, and in that time the Israeli Prime Minister then Ehud Barak really crushed the so-called uprising inside the Israeli Arab towns, because it was igniting into full scale. And what we saw recently is a little bit similar. Now, let's bear in mind again that there are some issues here that Israel would have to address once this is over in relation to its internal affairs. Israel is a democratic country. Israel really upholds the free society concept, and I truly believe that they have room here to work out these problems and overcome these difficulties.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of rioting back in October of 2000, referred to as the October event in Israel, where you actually had a kind of a joining together of Israeli Arabs, or a spillover of the Palestinian intifada into the Israeli Arab community, and sort of the various Arab Israelis, Israeli Arabs joining in with protests and riots. But are relations among Arabs and Israel in general improving? Do you notice that? Is there more of a development of Arabs? People have spoken recently of Arabs in recent years identifying more with Israel and really seeing having a better life in Israel, really wanting to make Israel their home.
Well, this is the funny thing, is that, in fact, Andrew, this is really quite interesting what you asked, because a few weeks ago, I was talking with an Israeli Christian. I mean, you know, Israeli, quote-unquote, Arab, who's Christian, who told me that Christians, Israeli Christians living in Israel, are leaving these Arab towns and cities and moving to Jewish towns because of harassment by these Muslim Israelis. So there is really an issue here that even Christian Israelis or Christian Arabs are unable to live with Muslim Arabs inside Israel. And this is very scary. I have to tell you, this is very scary. And the guy, like I said, are you sure? He said, I'm 100%. He said, in Nazareth, a lot of them have decided to move to, I forgot the name, the adjacent Jewish town next to Nazareth. I forgot the name, it has a Hebrew name. He said, a lot of them moved there. In Haifa, they tried to move up to the mountain to where the Jews live because they just want to live there in peace and they want to avoid any friction with Muslims. Inside Nazareth, there have been a lot of incidents and intimidation against Christians. Remember last Christmas in Sakhnin, it's an Israeli Arab town with 5-7% Christian population. Christmas trees were torched twice by Muslim fanatics in inside Sakhnin. And the Israeli police had to investigate the two incidents, and it all led to local Muslim Arabs living in that town. They attacked the two churches. So, yes, the situation is not that great, but again, it is the duty of Israel to find a solution to this growing tension between its citizens.
Well, what could Israel do about that, particularly with respect to the majority of its, the Muslim majority among the Israeli Arab citizens? I mean, what are they getting taught in schools, for example, in the Israeli Arab school system? What other things could Israel do to try to strengthen the attachment of these Arabs to Israel? I mean, you've talked about the Christian community. You think they should, the Christian community should like the Druze and other communities in Israel should join in and do national service to Israel. But what about then the Muslim Arabs of Israel? What can Israel do there?
You cannot have a solution like with the Houdini touch. There is no magical wand here that can solve all the issues. But in my opinion, if I were sitting next to the prime minister, I would say we should start creating the debate of Christians becoming full citizens by imposing on them the obligation to serve in the IDF. If we reach that level, we would have removed an important component of the so-called Israeli Arabs, because the Israeli Arabs is a concept that combined both Muslims and Christians. So I don't want to say that we're applying the divide and rule, but that is step number one. By enhancing and emphasizing on that issue where Israeli Christians have to serve in the army. If we do that, then definitely you are creating a rift within the one society, and at the same time, you're sending an unequivocal message to the rest that it will either integrate or you are losing a lot here. And this is, by the way, you have also to remember there are Muslims who serve in the IDF and in the border police on voluntary basis. So, yes, you can find Muslims who are working inside the IDF as soldiers and as captains. In fact, I think the highest police, if I recall, the highest police was an Israeli Muslim Arab, actually. He was like, you know, he held the rank of general and who retired recently, by the way. I am almost certain. So you need to encourage and highlight the examples of how people can integrate with the country.
Hello?
Yes, hi. You hear me?
Oh, yeah, I lost you there for a moment. Well, okay, yes. Well, you know, talking about all this violence, thinking about the Al-Aqsa Mosque again, you know, there are news has come out that, you know, people were stockpiling stones there, for example, precisely to use in riots on the Temple Mount. Is this something common that mosques are used as a source of violence that people would stockpile, say, weapons there or something? Is that something that you've noted in your experience growing up in the Palestinian territories?
Not in the Palestinian territories, but we've seen some similar examples in Iraq where they would hide, you know, weapons and what have you inside mosques. And now, inside the Palestinian territories, I can't recall of incidents where mosques were used to, you know, hide weapons or something like that. Now, in the Al-Aqsa Mosque, I mean, images coming out of there have shown again and again that they bring stones and they bring a lot of stuff to throw at the Jewish worshippers at the Wailing Wall in certain occasions. Yes, I've seen such images where Muslims would be attacking Jewish worshippers who are praying at the Wailing Wall. By throwing,
well, yeah,
bottles,
I know.
Of,
I mean, there have been, there have been past incidents over the years of Muslims on the Temple Mount throwing stones down to the Jews praying below at the Western Wall, the Kotel on the Western Wall Plaza there. Yeah, that's happened before, but I was wondering if this is a recurring pattern that you've noted throughout your life in Palestinian society, that mosques would be sources of such violent incidents, not just at the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the Temple Mount, but elsewhere as well.
You know, I haven't, you know, I can't really think of where mosques could be a place to hide weapons. Again, Al-Aqsa Mosque is the only one where they have used to conceal, like, empty bottles and stones and throw stones and stuff like that. Now, also, any attempt to close mosques during the COVID pandemic was seen also that Palestinians even were adamant in rejecting the Palestinian Authority to shut down mosques because of the pandemic. So, yes, it has some sensitivity here that we have always to keep in mind. It was the same thing with, actually, with other religions as well, but I cannot recall, honestly, where mosques have been center of, you know, like weapons or cash. I don't think so.
Uh-huh, interesting. Well, looking at all of this outbreak of fighting and violence, clashes on the Temple Mount, and now Hamas's recent rocket barrages, what effect have the Abraham Accords and these various peace deals with Arab countries, with Israel? I mean, you've had now Morocco, Sudan, and then started by United Arab Emirates and Bahrain have all signed these recognition deals with Israel. What effect have these accords had upon both the Palestinian Arab community and the Israeli Arab community in prospects for peace with Israel?
Well, obviously the Palestinians adamantly rejected all these attempts to normalize, and they were, you know, insulting all these Arab states, United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, Sudan, Morocco, and what have you, that they are betraying the Palestinian cause and the Islamic cause. However, we have to take into consideration that the influence of Iran here has been, in a way, misrepresented or not fully covered. Iran plays a major role in what is happening right now, and right now what is happening in Gaza. Because, you know, this is serving Iran and definitely blowing in its favor. This is where not many people, maybe you haven't paid close attention to it, but definitely right now there is a need to come to a kind of lull or some kind of ceasefire. Egypt is working hard to reach that because they believe the continuation would really damage these moderate Arab countries.
Well, that brings to mind, I mean, thinking about United Arab Emirates and these Gulf nations and other Arab nations, is there a growing then a disconnect between, we talk about this Palestinian society that's very devout, right? Very has a lot of Islamic zeal, and say the United Arab Emirates. I mean, you mentioned this former police chief of Dubai who had tweeted out that, you know, Jews should just go live as Simis, as a protected minority, as it's called in Islam historically, in Muslim countries, and leave Jerusalem. Is there any growing disconnect between, say, our societies like United Arab Emirates becoming more secular, more worldly, more cosmopolitan in comparison to, say, this Palestinian society? Is there any growing divide there?
I really am not sure I can believe that we will be able to see a secular society evolving to full-fledged secular society in any Muslim country, because we have an example in Turkey. Turkey, which was really a very strong secular country, it is coming back to its Islamic roots. And the failure of the secular regime that was established by Ataturk in Turkey make it clear that I doubt we will be able to see secular states within the Islamic countries. It will vary between time to time. But in general, Islam will remain a major component, if not the component, of these societies.
Mm-hmm. Well, thinking about, I guess one thing, another issue that's come up, we've sort of mentioned briefly, but talking about these squatters at this neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah in Jerusalem. It's on the north side of the old city of Jerusalem, about a mile away from the old city. Why can't these squatters, they're not paying rent in these buildings that whose property goes back to Jews that was seized by the Jordanians when they came into Jerusalem in 1948 and expelled all these Jews and the people who hold the Jews who now hold deeds. property wants to expel these squatters who are not paying their rent. Why can't they just go somewhere else? Is this just a kind of a confrontation theater that Palestinians here are seeking to create a fight, to create a dispute, and show like evil Jews are oppressing us?
No. This is legal versus moral. And when I say legal versus moral, I refer to the ownership of these houses. Yes, from a legal point of view, these are Jewish-owned properties in Jerusalem that they were owned by Jews before 1948. After 1948, actually, they ran away in February 1948. After 1948, they were under full control of the Jordanian government, and it was established as an Arab neighborhood. However, the moral issue here is that if you are claiming this Jewish property, then what about the other properties owned by Christians and Muslims in West Jerusalem, which they lost in 1948? So if you want to apply the rule and say this is a Jewish property, fine. What about my grandmother's property in the German colony in West Jerusalem, which was taken away from us in 1948? And why we are unable to get it back, and why nobody has paid us rent, God knows when. So this is the moral versus the legal issue. Yes, from a legal point of view, totally agree that they have to pay the rent. The moral point of view is that there's still an open wound that hasn't healed, that the law, the properties that were lost by the Jews in the conflict when Israel was established in 1948. We have to be very conscious about that. We're not talking about trying to prepare. We're talking about properties.
Right. That's an issue that's raised. Of course, lots of Arabs then went into the eastern part of the city of Jerusalem that was under Jordanian control, and then from the Jordanian occupying authorities, they received all these properties that have been lost by Jews, and Israeli law has respected that. I mean, because Jordan transferred title of these properties to all sorts of Arabs in Jerusalem, the Israeli law says, yes, those Arabs can keep those properties. I mean, in this case, though, this property stayed under the Jordanian government's control until 1967 when Israel was able to throw out the Jordanians and liberate Jerusalem from the Jordanian occupation. But I understand, there's a moral, I guess you would say then that there's perhaps a moral sense among Arabs of like, we want this wound to be settled of, our loss in Jerusalem as well.
Exactly. And that's why they use it to incite against it and to remind the world about their lost properties. And that's also play in the rhetoric to get a lot of financial compensation. Because at the end of the day, this shows how complicated the conflict is right now. And it's a zero-sum game. One has to win and one has to lose. I can't see how this could be resolved in a friendly manner. It only needs maybe another 50 years or 100 years. Time has healed a lot of things since 1948, and probably another 50 years or 100 years to heal other wounds. But until then, we have to apply what I call M&M, which is maintenance and management to the conflict. I'm not referring to the chocolate. I'm referring to maintenance the conflict only has to be managed and cleaned until God knows what happens.
All right, then. Well, for our listeners out there, you've been listening to another episode of Conservative Casual Friday with your show host, Andrew Barrett. And we've been discussing recent crises and conflicts in Israel and among with the Palestinians with Samir Azadon, a Arab Christian from the Bethlehem region, from Beit Jalal, in the disputed territories of the West Bank, the historic Judea and Samaria. And for our listeners out there, we hope you join us next week for another episode of Conservative Casual Friday. Well, Samir Azadon, thank you for joining us for the show.
Thank you, Andrew. Have a blessed day.
All right, then. Until next time. Thank you very much.